Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Red FM.
Welcome once more to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you. Plenty of Premier League action happening today. Earlier finished Bournemouth 2, Everton 1, Chelsea 2, Burnley 2, Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 1, and Spurs 2, Luton 1. And even earlier again, Harvey Barnes was the hero for Newcastle as they came from behind to beat West Ham 4-3. What an absolute thriller that one was. Stephen Goldsmith reports from St James's Park.
Newcastle United 4, West Ham 3, and it's a second goal for Harvey Barnes. He just receives the ball in the middle of the park, about 25 yards or so out. He lets it roll onto his right foot and smashes it low into the bottom right-hand corner. St James's Park erupts. The substitute and coaching staff all run down the touchline to celebrate with the players. What a turnaround here. Newcastle 4, West Ham 3.
Manchester United in action at 8 against Brentford away from home. Can they get that top 4 spot? And at the moment it's Aston Villa 0, Wolves 0. Of course, Villa looking to stay in the top 4 there themselves. To domestic football now, and Cork City women's team got a much needed win against Bowes in Dalymount today. Eva Mangan scoring the game's only goal. The men's team also had a 1-0 win last night, but against Athlone Town. And if you're ever looking to cure your insomnia, go and watch that game back. Not pretty at all. But someone who is pretty is our very own Roy O'Hagan, who caught up with Tim Clancy in the press room after the game.
Tim, 3 points, you've got to be happy with the result, I suppose. What's your thoughts on the performance?
The result was very good, yeah. Listen, it wasn't free-flowing. It wasn't chance after chance after chance. I thought it was a bit disjointed first half. But only we had a focal point up front. I think when Murph came on, he gave us that. The ball stuck a bit more. And I thought Bagsy done really well when he came on as well. Barry Coffey gave us energy in the middle of the pitch as well, and listen, we get a goal from a set piece. It's something that we spoke about, importance of it. And again, I think listen, it's a speculative shot right in the 94th minute, wherever it was, but Brad makes a save, and apart from that, they didn't even look like scoring, so defensively looked really good.
Yeah, Brad was a spectator for most of the game, but for him to pull off such an acrobatic save, deflection, saw it lay, it's just incredible.
I think he's made more than it, more of it than it looked like, so but no, he's made a great save. And it's a good strike from the edge of the box with a deflection on it, but I thought we dealt with their threat. They tweaked it a little bit tonight as well and how they have been playing. And again, I just think I thought we moved the ball too slowly in the first half and was like sort of pedestrian, but again, we defended really well. We got another win, and if you ask me now to sit here, do you want to play well for the rest of the season or have another 29 of them, I'll take another 29 of them.
Certainly so. Credit to Athlone Town, though, they were very well organised, made you work very hard tonight.
Yeah, and again, they're the top scorers in the league before tonight, so the fact that they came here as the top scorers in the league and they didn't look like even getting a sniff of a chance, so that shows that defensively we're very solid. It's getting the balance now of getting more creativity in the team and more chances created, but not at the detriment of us conceding goals at the back either. I think you win games by scoring goals, but I think you win league titles by not conceding.
And just one goal conceded as well. Are you even surprised by how well your back four have gelled in and performed this season?
No, I'm not. Charlie's come in. He's a brilliant lad. He's absolutely unbelievable in the dressing room, and he gives you the balance of the left foot at centre-half. John O'Donovan's a young left back that still has a lot of improvement in him, but he's got a fair bit of experience as well for his age. And Keane Coleman is like a magnet in both boxes. He wins every header, he wins every duel he comes up against. I know he got a bit of stick last season, and I hurt him a lot because he's one of the ones that it meant so much for him to play for this club. And I'm delighted the way he's started the season. He's been a proper leader, proper captain for us, and he's been absolutely unbelievable in the dressing room as well. And we've got a really good dressing room. We've still got Dara Crowley to come back. You've Malik, you've Conor Drinan, you've Muzz, you've a few others there as well that are still available to come back. And in the next few weeks, we'll have a full array of players to pick from and to go with the players that we have and some of the talented young players. I think it's going to be really good.
Jack Tindray and Loughler, what was the next
of
that?
Listen, it's very similar actually to Barry Coffey's red card against UCD. Jack's played it wide, he's running behind, and the fella's off the ball, is studding his Achilles. So it just seems like it was a stud mark right down the back. He's got a cut in the back of his Achilles, so
That's just interesting that we missed a player for three games and same foul, it's a yellow card in another team. So it's frustrating. We've had a tackle on Jack in the first game of the season against Kerry here where the fellas just laddered him off the ball as hard as he could and it was a yellow card as well. So we've probably been a bit harshly treated in regards to Barry missing the three games, but hopefully Jack will be okay for Monday.
Yeah, needs more protection maybe from
Ricky. Well, listen, it's. I don't think it's a nasty one. I just think that the fella tried to stop him, but he's got a cut down the back of his Achilles from a challenge that was completely off the ball. The ball was 30 yards away, and if you actually look where it is, as Jack's played it, he's in on goal. He's behind the player and he's just stood on him. So it's good defending because I'd probably scream if my player to do it as well. But it's just a sore one. I think it's only just a superficial one of the wound, so he should be fine.
Are there any other players who come back into the bench for Monday with Dara or
Monday? Dara signed off to back into games. It's about getting him game time. Unfortunately, it's right in the middle of the 20s, not having a game for 4 weeks, 3 weeks. So there's an in-house game tomorrow where Dara will get minutes in, and then it's just building them minutes up. As I said last week, athletically he's another week's training. He's fit. He's looking strong. He's looking really good. He's moving well. It's just ticking the box now, getting the minutes in games. And after that, I think Muzz will be probably a bit longer. Maybe Covey should be okay for possibly the week after, but Malik then's a few weeks after that, and Conor Drainer should be very close as well.
And do you feel kind of rotation is something you have to look at for a Friday, Monday turnaround, or how do you approach
it? I just think in general, when you look at the best team in this country for the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, Shamrock Rovers, you see from managing against them, and you look to the 60 minute mark and the game's level and you turn around and they're bringing 3 or 4 players on that are as good as any of the players that are starting, it can be like, here we go again. And I think we have that in the squad now. I think look, the two players particularly came on after 60 minutes. Bagsy, I thought, was excellent when he came on. He was direct. Barry Coffey gave us loads of energy in the middle of the pitch. A little bit different to how Evan plays. Thought Evan was brilliant as well again. He's been brilliant in the last 4 or 5 games. And obviously Murph came on at half time, gave us that focal point as well. And Niall come on in as well. I thought Jaden was excellent from the bench. I know he's only young, but he's now getting more experience, more exposure to first team football. And you can see that he's athletically very good, and he was confident getting the ball and running with it and getting us up the pitch. So I think the general rotation and the minutes that we're going to have to get into the players is going to have to be monitored, and again, not necessarily the starting 11 is always going to be the best 11. It could be the best for the start of the game, and then you might have impact players that can go on and win you the game as well.
Rory also spoke to Cork City legend and his co-commentator for the evening, Philip Long.
Philip Long, not a great game, there's no way of sugarcoating it, but 3 points for City, and when you want to get promoted from this division, that's all that matters.
At the start of the game, Rory, would you settle for a fabulous game, or would you settle for the 3 points?
Well,
you go for the 3 points. No, it wasn't a great game to watch. First half wasn't great, but the second half livened up a little bit. You know, I'd blown through everything in the first 10 minutes in the second half, but City soaked it up and came forward, and City just dictated the game in the second half until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, the first half, Phil, look, there's no way of coating it. It was dreadful. City didn't have a shot on target. Yeah. To be fair to Athlone Town, they were well organised, they were diligent, they worked very hard, they put City under pressure, and that's why it was scoreless.
Oh yeah, brilliant. You know, they really were brilliant. I mean, Dylan Hand playing the centre back there for Athlone, he just dictated everything, you know. And in fairness, Athlone played very, very well, but City are very, very professional. And and it just came out in the end.
The second half things changed up a little bit, some substitutions changed things City's way. Kean Murphy came on for Nathan Wood, he put himself about a lot, and I suppose he gave City a bit of a threat that they were missing in the first half.
He did, yes, yeah. I mean, he threw his body into a couple of challenges there, and Barry Coffey came on as a sub and he was pushing it around the place. I think Barry Coffey made a big difference when he came on, you know, and well justified in the result.
Yeah. If you want to be a league winning side, you want goals from your defenders. We got one tonight, and that was a lovely goal from Charlie Lyons. Nice header from close range from Doherty, but the way he pulled off his man and got the space fill.
The ball came into the box and just Charlie just went up for it. There was no one around him. It was a free header, you know, and he put it away lovely into the corner. And typical centre back, you know, just nodded into the corner, just do the simple thing there.
Yeah. Doherty, a bit of a frustrated figure tonight, Phil. Kind of played a more withdrawn role tonight, and that kind of number 10, which I think probably suits him a bit better, but didn't see a lot of ball.
Yeah, well, you like him seeing there. I prefer him up a bit further, to be honest. He didn't, and he got frustrated. There's no doubt whatsoever. You can't blame him for that. But he got a nasty little injury, so hopefully he'll be okay for Monday.
Yeah, we'll find that out there when we talk to Tim Clancy in the next couple of minutes. But late drama, Phil, and we have to talk about that save from Brad Wade. I said it in commentary, Phil, you're not going to see a better save this season.
Yeah, you're definitely right there, Rory, to be honest, because that ball was goal-bound. And just an unbelievable reflex save. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a corner kick that came in just half clear by City. Fell to Daniel McKenna, who took a shot. Big deflection and just the reflexes. He saw it late, Phil, to push it over the bar. The acrobatic save. That's wonderful.
Oh, it was great to see it, and I hope we see something like that again, you know, because, that was the highlight of the night, to be honest.
Yeah, it certainly was. Not a whole lot to talk about in this game, but it's 3 points, as we said. That's all that matters. City wants to get out of this division at the first chance that they get. And now for them going up to Wexford on Monday. Cove Ramblers here next Friday. So it's a busy time for City, but look, 3 games in a week, 3 points to kick it off. You're not going to complain, Phil. You can't.
No, you won't complain, no. But Wexford will be a tough one on Monday, Rory. And especially now, there might be a couple of niggles here and a bit of injuries here and there. So we'll see what team is going out on Monday for Wexford. But Friday night will be the big one then. Local derby with Ramblers.
Phil, as always, a pleasure, sir.
Thanks, Rory. Thank you.
Oh, I'm cold.
Good journalist would have taken that last bit out. But there's no friends in showbiz, Rory. It's nice and toasty in the studio, I assure you. Thank you to Rory for all of that. To a bit of GA now. And in the McCarthy Insurance Cork County Football Division 1, Carberry Rangers beat Ballincollig on a scoreline of 11 points to 8 earlier today. Our very own Ger McCarthy caught up with losing manager Padraig O'Mahony of Ballincollig after the game.
Padraig O'Mahony, first of all, commiserations on that narrow defeat here to Carberry Rangers in the County League Division 1. You played really, really well for the first half of that game. We were a point ahead and could have been a bit more ahead. But the third quarter, they just got on top of you?
Yeah, fairly poor start. And then it was the second quarter. The first half, we were surely a bit honest. And we left a few scores behind us. That breeze is strong. And look, the boys came out in the second half. They just showed a lot more aggression and, fitness, and they took their scores when they had us under pressure. Yeah, and we didn't perform in the second half, really.
You have a lovely approach work. Your short kick out was working really well. You were working the ball up the pitch, especially in that first half, and got some fantastic scores. Is that the kind of football that you're looking for or looking to play in the Championship?
Well, yeah, sure. Look, you don't know. I mean, it's horses for courses, really, isn't it? You'll be trying to try everything. Look, I wouldn't be making excuses. The better team won today comfortably. The reality is you're missing 10 year squad today, and it's very hard to try and do anything. We have a lot of young fellas. We have 3 leaving certs, and it's very hard on those guys as well. And we have 2 or 3 fellas back. Brian Keating's first game of football, or second game of football in 3 years, you know what I mean? And a few guys back from injury. So from our point of view, it's work in progress every week. Do you know what I mean? Just disappointing result, really.
And is that what you're looking for? Consistency of performance from whoever's available to you for the rest of the league?
Yeah, sure it is, of course. I think every club's in the same boat. Do you know what I mean? I think Kilimatra were down an awful lot of players last night. It's unfortunate. And the same as us last year, playing with 2/3 of our junior team. And at this level, you have to have numbers. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it is. And your county panelists are not with you. It's difficult, you know?
But when they're away and when they do come back, are you just trying to put in a pattern of play that is effective and gets the best out of your players? Because it worked in the first half.
It worked in the first half, yeah. But we still left scores behind us. The bottom line is it didn't work in the second half. So we'll just have to go back to the drawing board again, Joe.
And just finally, what's like in terms of just, is it a case of just staying up in Division 1 this year, or are you just looking to kick on now as players are coming back bit by bit?
Sure, look, last year, the best achievement for us last year was we lost the first 6 games. We beat Kishgame, the Bears and the Haven to stay up in the competition. As I said, with 2/3 of our junior team playing, so we have one win out of 3. We'd be hopeful to stay up. That's it. And after that, I don't know what way you'd look at the league. Like, as I say, with fellas out and out of the country, and you're never playing with a full complement, so it's very hard. I mean, it's kind of, is it 3 seasons and 1 season really is what you're looking at? It's a pre-season, and it's difficult for all managers to try and get consistency, really. Do you know?
Thanks very much, Rod.
Cheers, Joe. Cheers.
You're also caught up with winning manager Seamus Hayes of Carberry Rangers.
Okay, Seamus Hayes, Carberry Rangers are off the mark in the County Football League Division 1. You were down a point at half time, but you came out in the second half, kicked 5 unanswered points. So is this all down to the manager and what he said at half time?
I take the credit, yeah. No, in fairness, look, we came in at half time. I felt we should have probably been a few points up, to be honest. Had a few wides, really, that were within the scoring range. That, they were marginal, I'd say, because one umpire was giving them and the other wasn't, but sure, that's what you're going to get when you have two. one person from different clubs, but no, we should have challenged at half time to the lads, you know, that look, we were anticipating a huge challenge from Ballincollig, and like, you know, this was the opportunity to show everything they've been working on in training and to kick on, you know. We did say to them that the first 5-10 minutes were vital, and that if you could kick on, you know, obviously that would mean that like Ballincollig might find it a little bit harder to get up the pitch, and I think in fairness they took it on board, and I think, you know, got 5 or 6 points maybe in the first 15 minutes of the second half. So credit to the players on that, you know, they really manned up, as you'd say.
This was coming though, because you weren't that far off. You were still finding your feet a bit in the opening couple of league matches, but at this stage it's still very early, Seamus, I know, but to get the win now is a nice boost for the players that are available to you at the moment.
Oh yeah, I mean, sure, we had 34-35 tagged out there now today. They're all training 3 times a week with us, putting in a huge effort, so we have a serious squad, you know, more to come back as well. I think they're enjoying the training, you know, so like, it was a huge bonus for us to get the win. I thought we left the game behind us against Aerog, really, you know. But we got a point, which was vital. The Douglas game, then, look, the game shouldn't have been played. I don't think the conditions were terrible, so I didn't read too much into that. But we were looking for a big performance today, and credit to the lads, you know. I think they brought it, especially in the second half, as you said.
Between now and the end of the league, I mean, Championship is on the horizon, but it's not looming just large just yet. Like, is it just one game at a time, the old cliche, and just try and get as much out of it from the younger players as you can? Because you got a good boost today from the bench as well.
Yeah, I think we brought on 5, you know, fellas who maybe hadn't got game time the first 2 games and were kicking their heels a little bit. But, you know, when they get the chance, I think they have to take it. So, like, you know, the likes of Evan Brown and these fellas came on, they made a huge difference when they did, Paul Adnett. So, like, you know, we have got huge quality there. We'll take it game by game. Yeah, you know, we really want to be kicking on in the league as opposed to being at the bottom end of it last year. We wanted to be in the top half and be in the mix for it, you know. I think that's second season progress for our management team, definitely. And, you know, Castlehaven will be here now in 2 weeks' time. So, you know, we'll be looking forward to welcoming them to us as well.
Looking forward to it as well. Thanks very much for your time, Seamus.
Thank you, Jar.
Big game when they play Castlehaven in the Premier League. Aston Villa have taken the lead over Wolves this evening, and Clive Edwards has the latest from Villa Park.
Aston Villa 1, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0. The goal scored by number 19 Moussa Diaby. Corner kick, not well cleared, came to Diaby about 20 yards out. He hit a powerful left foot drive that gave the keeper no chance. Villa 1, Wolves 0.
Sticking with the GA again, Gael Cloister, Moura, Eigh on Monaster, Tua. Jeez, I hope I pronounced that right. Are the January winners of the Rebel Oak Award. The award is sponsored by overall main sponsor Clayton Hotel Silver Springs, Cummins Sports, the award sponsors, and Red FM and The Echo as media partners. The school won the Cork College's Under-16A Hurling Championship, beating Middleton CBS in the final, with the school going from strength to strength on the hurling field under the watchful eye of Principal Donal O'Bukala. Rory was at the award presentation at the hotel on Monday and spoke to Vice Principal Tighog O'Murcu.
All right, Tighog and Cadre Shields, how are you?
Neil O'Bakers.
Tell us, I suppose, this is a special occasion for this group of lads in the school as a whole, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, this particular under-16 team had a massive win against Middleton in the Cork County final. You know, they put in a lot of work into it. Every team we have up in the school really is striving to kind of bring them on, bring the AG back to the success they had in yesteryears. And it's a slowly but surely process. But this under-16 one was a real signal to us that, you know, it is possible, given the level of quality in the team that we were playing in the final with Middleton. They won the under-15 Munster the year before in the A grade with a massive margin. So it was a mountain like we believed we could climb, but we never really thought we'd do it in the fashion we did on the day in the final, which was a classic match. And we were delighted to get the win over them, and I think for these lads, especially the team, it they're delighted with the award, and it's well deserved, you know.
Yeah, when you talk about, I suppose, the history of the AG, I suppose, going back all through the years, I suppose the weight, pressure, expectation, is that something you feel going into 2 years like this?
Not expectation and not real pressure. It's just, I suppose, the school is a vision again for hurling. It never lost a vision, actually, but, you know, we're lucky in the personnel that have come in. Even with 10 years gone by, like, we've had Ed Cronin kind of kept hurling alive up there with Don O'Grady when things weren't going great. Then the likes of Tim Lorden and Liam Short and guys who've left school since to be deputy principals, and Damien Maloney's another one of them, really kept the thing going. And now we've Tomás Manning here, and Seamus Mockall, even Aina Desmond and Donna Shorten with this team, and they're really driving things. We brought in Sean Ogo, Halpine and Gary Gray last year, who were Cork minor coaches, and like, that really added to a real buzz in the school. We had a massive win against Cashel in the first round of Hearty, who were champions the year before. That was another kind of marquee moment for the school, where a bit of belief came back to the north side, I think, in general. You know, we were gutted that Napiercy and Glen Rovers have gone down the grade, yeah. Because you can just see it in morale amongst the lads in school. You know, the heads are down and, you know, they're just looking for a bit of belief. They were last year, and those wins really have kind of created a buzz in the school that's, we're kind of riding the crest of wave at the moment, but we need to capitalise now. We've good teams coming, like that 16 team. Next year's Hearty team will be decent. You know, it's about keeping the whole thing going now and keeping the belief, but really capitalising on the work going into it.
I spoke to Sean Ogahalpin about his involvement with the school a couple of months back, and he was absolutely delighted to be back and helping. Did the lads get a buzz about having an absolute legend, I suppose, being involved with the team?
Absolutely. Sean Og is a living legend up in our place. His sister, Sarati, the Alpine, is actually deputy principal. So there's traditional links there with him. Like, he is a living legend, former Cork senior captain. What he's doing on the north side himself with his own club and training teams and everything is inspirational. Like, you'd ask Sean Og to train a team in the middle of nowhere. It could be an underage team. He will not say no. Like, he's an absolute gentleman. He's a top-class coach. Not only does he have the hurling side of things, but, like, the strength and conditioning element of expertise that he brings is second to none. So, like, him coming in the door at the start of the year last year for the Hearty team alone, we were off to a flyer. Like, and I suppose we started going back training last year in August, which we hadn't done before. This year, for next year's Hearty campaign, we're down in UCC since January for next year. So, like, you know, it's going to a level of professionalism. It has always had a level of professionalism, I suppose, but it's gone to a different level altogether now, and you need that to compete. And I suppose these guys are seeing that the last 3 or 4 years, I think, in Hearty, like, there's been 3 different winners who've never won it before. That's another kind of carrot for us, that, like, you know, it is possible, and it's, the field is getting thinner, and it's getting more competitive, and if you can't beat them, like, you just have to hop on the bandwagon and join them.
Yeah. And talking about the squad of players, like, when do you realise, like, this is a special bunch and they could go on and do something?
I suppose a big thing for us, like, with years gone by, was, like, it was a numbers game. We are a co-ed school. We didn't have the numbers, really. Like, we used to have about 300 students in the AG, the academic side of the school, are back on board with us now with the hurling, which is a big plus. We'd love to get more numbers again from them, but they are helping big time. But I suppose we extended the school about 5 years ago, which doubled the numbers, which it is a numbers game, which really helped. So, like, at the moment now, in fifth year, and sixth year, we've got a, but from both years, we've got a panel of about, I think it was 40 last year. Like, I remember, even 7-8 years ago, we played Coleman's, and we probably had a team where 3 players in the team were struggling to kind of add value to the team, I suppose, to be polite about it. And we were struggling to pull guys off the bench. No, we don't have that problem. We have a luxury with numbers, and it's about kind of consolidating that now and implementing it and putting it into play in games. So it's, the numbers really has added to the whole thing.
You talked about that final against Middleton, as you mentioned, a great occasion for the school. I imagine everyone's just absolutely buzzing from the whole thing.
Big time. And, like, I suppose Tomás Manning especially, he's involved with Cork Senior Hurling Management there. He's brought a level of, I suppose, analysis to games. Like, he pulls videos of other oppositions out of every angle, and he just he brought in the huddle kind of platform this year, which analyses ourselves and oppositions, and kind of he tailors game plans to the opposition you're playing. Which, I mean, I suppose if we're teaching ourselves in a normal day, we're going out to train teams after, years gone by, we wouldn't even had a notion about this kind of stuff. But he's brought that expertise from Cork Seniors into us, and it's like, sometimes you listen to him, it's like Minecraft, like, he's the stuff he's talking about. But the lads get it, they understand him, and they've bought into him. He really is our secret weapon, like, and he has added massive value, and it's just changed the game for us, really.
And going forward, I suppose that win over Middleton is going to give that lads just so much confidence.
Big time. And I suppose they all know each other as well. So, like, going into that final, there was a mix between, from the lads. You could nearly get the buzz of a mix of nervousness, excitement and confidence rolled into one, which is always a weird mix. So, like, half the fellas are buzzing for the game, the other half are nervous and apprehensive about what might happen. Like, Middleton had massive numbers, and, you know, they're a great hurling school with great tradition. You know, there probably was a level of we caught them on the hop a bit in that final, in that we'd so much work done, and we'd such a game plan just tailored for them. And everything worked out perfectly. You know, we got crucial goals, crucial times. We defended when we had to. We got the bounce of the ball, or goalkeeper Shane McCarthy made two miracle saves. All that has to go for you when you're playing these games and these teams. Like, so it happened for us in the day, and we're just hoping that we can kind of ride on that again in the future.
Huge congrats to all involved. I won't offend you by attempting to pronounce the school's name once more. Irish was never the strong suit. That concludes the first half here of the Big Red Bench on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you. After the break, we would hear from the Gaelic statsman about Cork's Camogie loss to Galway earlier, as well as a Football League final preview. We also have a Munster rugby preview for their game against Cardiff in Thomond later. Don't go anywhere.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Red FM. Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Welcome back to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you. And earlier on, I was delighted to be joined by the Gaelic statsman once again, where we chatted Cork's Camogie loss to Galway, as well as a Football League final/finals preview. We're once again joined by the @GaelicStatsman on Twitter, but also known as Matthew Hurley. Matthew, you watched Cork's defeat to Galway earlier on today. Galway 14 points, Cork 9 points in the very Camogie National League. Were Galway very good or were Cork poor, Matthew? What was your take on it?
I think, honestly, Galway were very good, in fairness to them. They had an over 70% shot accuracy in the game, which was really, really good from them. Yeah, Carrie Dolan was on form for Galway in particular. She got 10 points today. She took 11 shots as well, and it was just impossible nearly for Cork to stop her. And to be fair to Cork, they put out a strong enough team. Like, Ashley Thompson came in as a late replacement. You had Amy O'Connor still on the pitch there as well. You had other players like Orla Callahan in and around the team. Hannah Looney wasn't in the team. There was one player that was not in before Tron. Laura Tracy was there, Laura Hayes. So it was a strong enough team for Cork. But like, I think Joe Manley would honestly be happy enough with how the league campaign has gone. I know the losses to Tipperary and Galway were kind of big in fairness. The Tip loss, I think, was a hard one kind of to take for them. But they are all Ireland champions. They'll go back to the drawing board now for the championship. And really, a few weeks' rest may do the players good in fairness, because you have the Munster Championship coming up, then you have the All-Ireland campaign as well, and there'll be a load of teams going after Cork. You have Galway, you have Kilkenny, you have Tipperary on form this year, you have Waterford reaching an All-Ireland final there last year as well. So there is a lot of teams that want to be up there on the pedestal with Cork this season. So I honestly think a rest might do the Cork team good.
Yeah, I mean, a conversion rate for the Cork side of 50%, like, you're going to win. You're not going to be winning too much with that type of conversion rate.
No, not really. And I think it was nearly the same against Tipperary. The conversion rate nearly let them down at times. But then, look, the real positive thing about Cork in the last two seasons is they seem to produce very good conversion rates and good performances they put together once championship comes. And I was lucky enough to speak to Matthew Toomey a few times last year, the manager from last season, and he was saying as the season went on, they kind of improved. If you remember last year, they lost to Galway in the league final, they lost to Galway the first day of the championship, but ever since the game against Down in Parky Keeve, they improved game by game after that. I think they beat Clare as well. They ended up beating Kilkenny in the All-Ireland quarterfinals. Then against Galway, they produced a miraculous performance. And then hammer Waterford in the actual final itself. So I do think Cork are the kind of team to produce the good performances when needed later on in the season. And it will be interesting to see how they perform in the championship this year. Like, everybody will be chasing them down. We'll have to see how they get on this year. But as for today, it was a disappointing result, but a positive maybe. They scored more from play than Galway. Cork scored 6 points, Galway scored 5 points, and it was really the second half that Galway kind of pushed on in a way. Like, Carrie Dolan, as I said, was very, very good. You had Aoife Donoghue wing forward was excellent as well. Even Niamh Kilkenny coming on, I think, for the first time in the Galway team since 2022, so that's a massive player to have back into the team. So yeah, I think Galway were well deserving of their victory today, and Cork would just have to go back to their drawing board for the Munster Championship.
For you, are Tipperary the team most likely to hunt them down? They're off to some serious flyer this year.
I would have thought at the start of the season Kilkenny would have been, but they've only won 2 games out of a possible 5, which isn't really good from a Kilkenny point of view. They beat Waterford now today, which was their first win in a while, so it'd be interesting to see old Pat Chapp clear kind of regains the troops in many ways for Kilkenny, but Tipperary look in serious form. I've seen them against Cork in the last few weeks, and Eamon McGrath in particular was really, really good that game. And you have two players in particular, Eamon McGrath and Eamon Lukman in defence. They're in the UAE Ashburn Cup winning team, so they were bang on form in that competition, and they're bang on form for this league campaign as well. And it's no harm to have another team as well, because like in the last few seasons in Camogie, it's been Cork, Galway, Kilkenny, but now Waterford and Tipperary are slowly but surely coming into the fray. It's all good signs for Camogie, and it isn't as if Tipperary have just performed well this season, winning 4 out of 5 games and everybody starts taking them seriously. They did well up until the All-Ireland semi-final last year when they lost, probably shockingly so, to Waterford in the last 4. They were very good up until that point, beat Antrim very, very well. They won the Munster Championship as well. So they were a serious team even before this season. So like Tipperary have carried on that form. And even for the Munster Championship, it won't be an easy win for Cork going into it. And it's been an easy win for Cork in the last few seasons, before last season in particular. But now with Tipperary and Waterford coming to the fray, it's not going to be easy for the Rebels.
Certainly not. And Tipperary, after beating Clare today, 419 to 7 points. I mean, talk about demolition jobs. Not to completely spring it on you, but I will, of course, anyway. There's two big games on in Croker. Well, there's two games, big games on in Croker tonight, arguably, as well. But in Division 1 and 2 tomorrow, Dublin versus Derry, Matthew, what way do you see that going?
It's an interesting dynamic, this game, because both sides have done brilliant in the league. I suppose, like, on my podcast there during the week, Seamus Brady made a very good point, actually. That Dublin are the All-Ireland champions. They've been season campaigners in Croke Park. The team they're facing, and while Derry are doing well at the moment, haven't beaten a big Division 1 team in Croke Park. So that's something that Derry, that Mickey Hart's team have to overcome tomorrow. It's going to be a very interesting occasion. And as well as that, as well, to add to the spice in many ways, in Celtic Park, Derry rested quite a few players, in particular Conor Glass and Garrett McKinless. So it'd be interesting to see, actually, if Mickey Hart puts out a first team. I imagine he would, against Dublin in the league final. Like, you'd be kind of wrong not to do so in many ways. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes tomorrow. And to be honest, I'd fancy Dublin to go on and win it in the end, but like Derry, if they were to beat Dublin, considering the years that they've had over the last few seasons, and considering they were in Division 4 as recently as 2019, if they were to win Division 1 5 years later, it would be absolutely a miraculous rise, and would just show that it isn't just Dublin and Kerry up at the pedestal, Derry are there as well. So it'd be an interesting game.
Yeah, and I mean, as you rightly kind of called out to a degree, Sean Kavanagh on Twitter, I mean, he said it was a Dublin and Derry are the best counties by some distance. I mean, Kerry certainly will have a say in this championship yet, and I would say if Dublin were to play, or Derry were to play Kerry in a big game in Croker come June, July, I'd be putting my money on Kerry anyway, certainly.
You put the money on Kerry really because of the tradition that they do have, the players that they have, especially your man up front, needs no introduction, David Clifford from Fossa, but yeah, Kerry are really seasoned campaigners. I just think people kind of disrespected them after the Dublin game in Croke Park. It was a bad performance from Kerry, but like that might come back to bite the likes of Dublin and Derry later on down the season, because Kerry might produce a good performance come championship time, which they usually do in many seasons. Like, look at last season in particular. They, against their very own Cork, they probably should have lost the game down in Parky Cave. But then later in the season, in the quarterfinal in particular against Tyrone, they turn it on and then spice up the championship game. And they nearly beat Dublin in the All-Ireland final as well, without playing particularly well. So Kerry are still a team to be looked at, there's no doubt about that. But there is kind of an onus too much on Paddy Clifford, David Clifford and Sean O'Shea. If Kerry can fix that problem, they'd be a dangerous team for any team coming down the line.
Yeah, they're trying to bring in lads like, I suppose, Killian, Spillane, etc. But there's just such an air of inevitability, like, that's kind of word thrown out a lot between Limerick and Dublin. But about this Dublin team, with the likes of Conor Gallagher, likes of Brian Finton, lads who aren't going anywhere anytime soon, even though everyone was kind of saying a few of the older lads were gone and finished. I mean, you still have Fitzsimons to come back into that squad. They're surely nailed on for, you'd imagine, Sam Maguire again.
They should be, in fairness. And Jack McCaffrey's another player that you forgot to mention there in the impressive roster. Paul Mannion as well, only came in the last game against Tyrone, I think. You have other players to come in as well. Like Cormac Costello had an injury in the last few games. He still has to come into the forward line. Cullen Basquiat came in for his first proper game the last time against Tyrone and scores 2 goals and 3 points. So this Dublin team ain't going over. And a lot of people kind of saying it was the last hurrah last season. But when you look at the players coming in, especially the youngsters like Cian Murphy at wing back, I've been really impressed with. Ross McGarry at wing forward has scored 12 or 13 points in the league so far and has done brilliantly in Bayern. Conor O'Callaghan is their very own. Shane McGuigan and David Clifford up front, form he's on at the moment. And you've the goalkeeping situation as well. Like, even if Cluxton has come back into goal, it would be harsh on Evan Comerford and David O'Hanlon, who have played so well in the campaign. Even Theo Clancy at fullback, it'd be harsh to bring him out to bring in Mick Fitzsimons. So the Dublin options that they have off the bench is absolutely incredible and something to behold. That if you were to say that about Dublin, considering their performances in Division 2 last season against the likes of the Corks, the Clares and the Derrys, if you were to say Dublin were front runners for the All-Ireland by a certain distance, some people would have called you crazy. So it's a miraculous recovery by Dizzy Farrell's team in many ways. And I'd agree with you, they are All-Ireland contenders in my opinion.
Yes, I'd say strong favourites at that. Division 2, of course, we played both of these teams. Donegal absolutely blew us away. And then we have Armagh, of course, who we drew with. What way do you see that one going? I know Donegal now have a few injuries coming into it, so that might swing it in Armagh's favour.
It might do, yeah. Like Paddy McBrearty and Ryan McHugh, I was hearing during the week, are going to be out for this game. And particularly Paddy McBrearty, scored 1 goal and 26 points in Division 2, which is a brilliant record. And that's Donegal's top scorer. The only player to score remotely close to that for Donegal is Oisin Gallan, 22 points. So it'd be interesting to see how he handles the mantle in fairness. He did so in the All-Ireland last season, but I'd imagine he'd be the front-runner in Croke Park tomorrow. And what's worrying as well from a Donegal point of view is Rian O'Neill hasn't really stepped up for Armagh in the league. Like, even against Cork, the last time he started for the first time in a while and scored nothing in Parking Heath. You have the likes of Conor Turbitt scoring for fun in that division. You have Rory Grugan scored 2 goals and 18 points. You have Oisin Connolly at Conor forwards. He's been absolutely brilliant in this league campaign. So Armagh definitely have the numbers. They've balanced defence and attack really, really well in this campaign as well. And I'd fancy Armagh to win that Division 2 final, no doubt about it. They look really, really good. But Donegal, Jim McGuinness, he might have a plan up his sleeve. You know the coach that he is, Dan, so we'll never know.
Yeah, certainly do. They'll have a say in championship no matter what as well, to be fair to them. But he was giving out about injuries, the run of league games, I should say, during the week, and the lads getting injured. But ultimately, he's the one playing them in games that were dead ropers, and now they're injured for the final.
Yeah, it was a weird one last week, actually. I seen even the Armagh Cork game. I was actually surprised to see the likes of Rian O'Neill and the team, Stephen Campbell coming onto the pitch. Rory Grugan there as well. Jarry O'Byrne's played most of the game. Like, you would have thought they'd rest them, considering Ulster is the most cutthroat provincial championship as well. But clearly they weren't. They were going to go home for those games, you know, by hook or by crook. And it did fall back on Donegal. It dinged on Armagh. That's the way the cookie crumbles, maybe. But yeah, it was just surprising to see so many stars in such dead rubber games in many ways. So yeah, I suppose it just shows the temperament of both managers, in fairness as well, in Jim McGuinness and Kieran McGeaney.
Who's been the player of the league, entire league, so far for you, Matthew?
It's a tough one, actually. I think, honestly, I know Tyrone have done really, really poor in the league, but Darragh Canavan has been brilliant at corner forward. He's been the top scorer from play in Division 1. He tore Mayo asunder in the league. He tore Monaghan asunder. That goal he scored after the pass from Niall Morgan was absolutely outstanding. So you'd have to say that Darragh Canavan is up there. And just from a core point of view as well, Chris O'Jones has been brilliant. Top scorer from play in Division 2 with 2 goals and 15 points. He's been absolutely superb and definitely deserves a mention. Conor Corbett as well, even going further down the divisions, even Leitrim, who are playing in Croke Park this weekend. Darragh Rooney with 40 points, Ryan O'Rourke 5 goals and 18, miraculous numbers in many ways. Pat Haver from Down, there's been so much, but I would give it to Darragh Canavan because of the influence he's had on a pretty underperforming Tyrone team, let's be honest.
Do you have all those scores written down in front of you, just doing it by memory? That's absolutely incredible.
Ask that most of the time, Dan. I kind of memorise it just because I just look at them all the time, and that's what happens in general. But
Matthew Hurley, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us once again.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Appreciate it. Great stuff there out of Matthew. And here's Rory chatting with Munster legends Alan Quinlan and Fiona Haynes ahead of this evening's clash with Cardiff on the Red 78 podcast on Off the Ball.
Quinny, having those internationals back is just such a massive boon, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think they need him. They need to get him back into the squad quickly and get involvement this week because they have Northampton the week after away. You know, it's kind of bonus territory because they're not going to be favourites going over to Northampton. If they were to win that, they're probably... I know Leon will have something to say about that with their match with the Bulls, but Munster's reward, if they were to get a win in Northampton, would be going to Pretoria a week early and playing the Bulls. So it's a really busy couple of weeks. It's a really important couple of weeks. For me, I'm still more... I think this squad is going to be challenging on two fronts with the injuries and the players that are missing is very difficult. And I'm not saying that you change your mentality and you go, we'll just focus on the URC. But I think it's Munster's best chance of possibly challenging for the trophy again, which is going to be incredibly difficult. And I think Leinster's approach will be different this year come the business end of the season. They won't be making as many changes, I don't think. They're favourites to win both trophies, and rightly so. It's getting the internationals back this week. It gives us a spring and a boost. And obviously... when you're in that situation, you can't expect the internationals to come back and set the standard and encourage and motivate everyone. It has to be, I think we always tried to have the policy that it was the other way around when we would be involved with Ireland and come back, that the players based at home would, drive the standards and drive the quality of training and all that kind of stuff, and that you can transition back in easily. So obviously when you have the quality and the experience of the players coming back, it's really important. I think it's unfortunate Ruan Quinn has picked up a hand injury again. I think Ollie Yeager is a big loss in the next couple of weeks. We don't know exactly. He's rehabbing from a minor procedure to the knee. I think he's a loss. I think he would have been really vital and important. But it's just happened time and time again all season. Brian Gleeson, we haven't seen him for a while. There's no mention of his injury. I think they're still down to the bare bones. The concern again is the front row in the next couple of weeks. Can they kind of because everyone they'll play in the next period of time is going to try and go after their scrum, and they've got to try and find a way, I think, to get that right and get their set piece right. So having the internationals back, yes, of course, it's a big boost, but they've got to, help them seamlessly transition back in. And hopefully we see that again on Saturday night. It's not easy coming back and expecting a big performance, but against Cardiff on Saturday night, they've essentially got to, change gears and try and find a performance as well, which will help them the next couple of weeks.
And with that, just on that as well, Quinny, because a lot of people are asking in the tweets about the scrum, have you huge concern around it, I suppose, going into that Northampton game in particular, or do you think it's easily fixable? Because I know you spoke about height with John Ryan as well.
It's not easily fixable. It's not just a simple scenario of I think I just didn't like the I just think we're too nice at times. And John Ryan, who's a former teammate and a great guy and a brilliant player, I just think he was allowing Nicky Smith dictate what was happening there the other night. He's got to drop his sight far more. And his right arm is up in the air like that, and it's allowing a lower loose head to get in under him. I think Niall Scannell as well was under pressure. Sam Perry is... He's a very strong scrummaging hooker for the Ospreys. But I just think sometimes you can't do anything. Power outweighs you, and you see that sometimes with the South African scrum, what they can do to teams. But I just think we were a bit nice the other night. We accepted it a little bit. And look, given the depth chart we have around the scrum and you know, Dave Kilcoyne is missing, Jaeger is missing now, that doesn't help. I just think they need to just have a bit of a dogged attitude and try and get much lower. So it is something they can work on for sure. And I think we've seen when they went to Toulon and even Northampton Scrum and Thomond Park in Europe, they did well in the scrum. They had issues in some other games, but everybody's going to go after that scrum now. You know, you think back to Bayonne and the European Cup in Thomond Park. Their scrum cost them the game there.
Yeah.
They got away with it the other night because of the standard and the level. It's not at the highest level. But I think the next few weeks, it's something they've got to just really try and do their utmost. Their height is much too high, in my opinion. I'm not an expert around that front row, and they've also got to bring a little bit more aggression and narkiness around what their approach is.
Just looking ahead to the game, Fiona, what are we expecting from Cardiff? I know they're kind of struggling for form recently. They haven't won since September. They're down 12th in the table. So, like, if you're looking at this, I suppose just in sheer stats alone, it should be a handy enough months to win. But Cardiff were certainly dogged last week in that defeat to Glasgow Warriors.
Yeah, and that's it. And I saw that game, and look, they were. And defence, we spoke about Munster's defence. I thought Cardiff's defence was brilliant in that game as well. Look, I think it should be Munster at home. I think it's going to be a completely different scenario. They'll have looked at this week, as I said, and reviewed situations. I do think they will certainly have to work on the scrum, because at the minute you're probably looking at, for the run into the end of the season, you're probably looking at the same props playing most games as well, be it starting or coming from the bench. There isn't much room for change over there, I think they'll have really spent a lot of time in that scrum area, especially in the lead into Europe. But I think Cardiff will come. They're tricky, but Munster will certainly get the job done. Is everyone the same? Will they have their internationals back as well, Quinny?
So
having their internationals probably add a little bit of spark there as well. So look, it's going to be an interesting encounter, but I think Munster getting Ankerville back in there, I think we'll have a lot more creativity, especially in attack.
Yeah, Gnankfeld going through the return to play protocols. We'll know more on him by the end of the week, but fingers crossed he will be available for Saturday night's game. What are you expecting from Cardiff, Quinny?
They're a dangerous side. I think certainly they're not a side that go away. I think they showed going to Glasgow Friday night themselves. Glasgow came back. I think Cardiff were leading 13-0. Cardiff came back. Glasgow came back and won the game. But they're a dangerous side. And I think when you look at the players they've come back, I know they're on the back of a frustrating and disappointing Six Nations, but they're still a fair bit of quality there. Again, Munster will be a big scalp for them. I think if you underestimate them in any way, it could be dangerous, dodgy situation. But Munster should be too strong. Again, it's down to attitude and what internationals go back into the team and Munster's approach themselves here. You know, when you look at, they're certainly going to try and go after Munster up front, and they've shown this year that they're a competitive, dangerous side. They're resilient. I think if you look at their last three results, they lose away to Glasgow on Friday night, which is always really difficult, 17-13. Leinster, they caused Leinster problems a couple of weeks ago. Leinster won 33-20. And Connacht had a really good win against them, 16-12, back in February as well.
Yeah, that's all we have time for on that one, the Red 78. Be sure to check that one out on Off the Ball. To a bit of athletics now. And one of the first races of the summer season is nearly upon us. The PWC Anthony Reedy Memorial 5K takes place on Wednesday, April the 10th, with funds raised going to UNICEF. The race is a 5K loop of the Marina and Parky Kiev and attracted over 700 runners each year since the race started in 2022. Rory has been speaking to Declan Monsell from PWC about the race and about Anthony.
Okay, ahead of the PWC Anthony Reedy 5K Memorial Race, which is happening
on the 10th of April 2024. So in just a couple of weeks, delighted to be joined by Declan Munsell from PwC to talk to us about the race. Declan, you're very, very welcome along to Red FM. How are you?
Hi, Rory. Nice to meet you up today.
Nice to meet you too, sir. Can you tell us, first off, before we get into the race, can you talk to us a little about Anthony Reedy and what I suppose kind of person he was, I guess?
Yeah, of course, Rory. Yeah, so Anthony was a colleague of ours in PwC, based here in Cork. A Kerry man originally from Knocknagoshal. He spent his entire career with PwC, and he was a partner in our assurance practice. And sadly, he got a cancer diagnosis, and he passed away in the summer of 2021. And, you know, he was a very important part of anybody who passed through PwC, even as a trainee accountant or as a met him through client relationships. So we decided to mark his legacy by holding this race. And we started in 2022. So this is our third event.
Was Anthony a runner himself? Was this something he was interested in?
Yeah, you know, he was. He lived out in Rochestown, so you'd see him out in the marina there often. So yeah, we thought it was fitting to mark him in this way.
Yeah, exactly. It's the third year of organising the race. How have you guys found, I suppose, the mechanics of organising a race and the difficulties that brings up?
Yeah, you know, it's a very, very good question. We do it in conjunction with the Cork BHA, Cork Business Houses Athletic Association. Mm-hmm. And when I spoke to them first, I thought we just would give them some money and they would run it on our behalf. But they quickly told us that this was our race and it was up to us to run it. Yeah. And they would just facilitate us in terms of setting out the route and setting up the gantry and all the logistics on the night. But ultimately, it's our race to run. So that piece took a bit of getting used to in year one. So there's no shortage of volunteers in PwC in terms of who wanted to be involved to help us run it. And there was a steep learning curve in 2022 when we did the first running of the event. And lots of learning points along the way. Mm. But in fairness, last year was pretty seamless. We're hoping for the same again this year now that we know how it all works.
Now that I ran in the race in 2022, there was a huge crowd at it and you never would have thought it was your first year running a race because I thought it ran very, yeah, very smoothly. And I suppose even from the check and I suppose in the PwC offices in Cork kind of adds that kind of bit of prestige and that kind of buzz and excitement about the race.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do registration in the atrium of our building on 1 Albert Quay from 6 o'clock with the race itself. It's kicking off at 7:30. Mm. And then afterwards, there's refreshments served back in our office, plenty of tea and coffee and cakes available. But yeah, the buzz on the night in the past 2 years was superb. We were delighted with how it panned out, and we're hoping to repeat that again this year. You know, we attracted over 700 participants in the first 2 years, and we're hoping to beat that this year. The only variable in the mix, I think, is the weather. You know, yeah, clearly outside, yeah, of our control. We were very lucky in the first year. Last year, there was an orange warning, but thankfully had just ended before our race. So again, fingers crossed this year that the weather will be good to us.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, like I ran it the first year, I was away last year, but the first year, just the atmosphere and the buzz around the place was something very special. And you can see it meant a lot to the PwC staff to not only be, I suppose, running the race, but to help out and volunteer as well. There was a great kind of company spirit there as well in the night.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we employ over 300 people in Cork, and there's no shortage of getting people to either volunteer. If you're not running or jogging or walking the event, there's plenty of jobs to do in the background, whether it's stewarding or whether it's helping with logistics or registration or the refreshments back in the office. Mm. So that piece was tremendously well supported, and we expect the same this year. It's really the first evening race in Cork City. So with the clocks changing and the evenings becoming that bit longer, hopefully, with a bit of good weather, it'll be another special event this year.
Yeah, certainly. So, and because it's on in the marina as well, it's like two laps of the marina. It's perfectly flat, so it attracts, yeah, some very, very good runners. And even for the spectators' point of view, it's a great race to come down and watch.
It does. Yeah. Actually, we've changed the route this year. In some ways, we're a victim of our own success, because what we found by doing two loops at the marina is that there was some congestion on the route. Mm. So this year, with the support of our BHA colleagues, they've advised that we move it to, you know, just a one loop 5K route. So still starting in the same area, at the bottom there of the corner of Monaghan Road, Centre Park Road, heading out Centre Park Road towards Atlantic Ponds and around Park of Cueve, and so up Monaghan Road, I should have said, and then back Centre Park Road, one 5K loop this year.
Yeah, still grand and flat, so it's a great place. It's a great place to run. Tell us, you've raised over €40,000 for charity, which is absolutely sensational for a race that's just running 2 years.
Anthony felt it was important to give back to the community, so we wanted to mark that legacy, and we really leave this bit with his family as to what charity partner they wish to select. So in the first year, it was Cork Simon. We supported Mary Mount Hospice. And then this year, when we phoned Marie, Anthony's wife, she said that given international affairs and what's happening in Gaza and in Ukraine, she felt it was appropriate to identify an international charity, and that's why we selected UNICEF Ireland as our charity partner this year. So, yeah, as you said, we've raised almost 40,000 so far, and we've opened our fundraising. We've a GoFundMe site set up, and so far it's got off to a very good start, and we're hoping to raise at least 10,000 for UNICEF Ireland this year.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, another big crowd again this year. Are you running the night yourself, Declan? Will you be there with a clipboard organising things?
Yeah, no, I wear two hats, really, you know, so I'll be making sure that the whole thing goes according to plan, before and afterwards. But yeah, no, I ran the first 2 years, and I also plan to take part again this year. Yeah,
it's a really, really good race. Really looking forward to it. If you want more details, corkbhaa.com/races/PWC. We're looking forward to the race, Declan. Hope to catch up with you on the night. Very, very best luck with it.
Super, Rory. Thanks a million for your time.
Great stuff. Be sure to get involved if you can at all. Thanks a million to all our contributors here on the Big Red Bench. Sarah will be here from some 6 tomorrow evening, rounding up the day's sport. Dan Casey signing off on Cork's Go Times Red FM. Stevie G is on the way next.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Red FM.